नमो तस्सा भगवतो अरहतो सम्मा संबुद्धस्सा नमो तस्सा भगवतो अरहतो सम्मा संबुद्धस्सा नमो तस्सा भगवतो अरहतो सम्मा संबुद्धस्सा बुद्धं धम्मं संघं नमस्सामि। Okay, so welcome out, Buddy Sunday. Had a number of different themes going through my mind, Dhamma-wise, in the last week, and we've had some things here in the community as well. And this is going to be a potpourri or a pot stew talk, I think. I have no idea what I've thought about what I'd say. One thing that keeps coming up is the night of the Buddha's enlightenment, the determination to sit down and make the determination that he would not rise until either he achieved enlightenment or basically turned to dust. He was willing to throw it all in for that effort. Then I remember when I first heard this some 2+ decades ago, I thought, okay, well, I'll do that. I'll sit down and just become enlightened, just put the determination in, and 15 minutes later, oh, I wonder what's on TV. So what is it that gets one to that point? I mean, what is the nature of mind that has to be two things, in my opinion. I've contemplated this many times over. You have to have the confidence that you can do it, and you have to then and have the development to do it, and then you have to have the determination to do it. So it's a process by which it needs to be developed. Now, if we look at this as an archetypical story, once he's made that determination, all the armies of Mara descend upon him with all manner of suffering. And we had a discussion a couple days ago or yesterday, and there's a thought that I've used quite a lot, the path to the cessation of suffering goes through suffering. So it's the very act of making a determination often in our life that sets us up for the challenge of meeting that. I mean, if somebody says, okay, my determination is going to be that I'm going to get up whenever I want and go to sleep whenever I want, well, nobody's going to go, hey, yay, great, great job. You're not going to really learn anything from that. You're not really going to become any better of a human being for a determination like that. But it really points to our, in many ways, the lack of dominion over our mind states. Like, we're coming up on the new year, and this is traditionally a time where people set like New Year's resolutions. And I mean, I don't know, there's a lot of comedians who come up with all kinds of jokes about, oh, you get to the gym and it lasts like a week, it's like, that's what I often do. I got as far enough as buying the subscription to the gym, and I didn't go too much. And then they made a lot of money off me. But the monastic form, actually, and the Dhamma Vidya, the training, the discipline, the Dhamma and the training, that's what it's about in many ways. I think it's one way of many ways looking at it, but there's, for me, it seems it's how one structures one life in order to cultivate the successes and mind that can see these challenges as they arise and develop and see how we actually fabricate the armies of Mara. Like, we are actually the ones who create those problems. And by using determinations, we overcome the delusions that we have that are going to be the challenges. And then we see that, I thought it was going to be this way, and it wasn't. And when you've done that enough, then you stop doing it. So, in particular, maybe speak a little myself about, like, you know, we often use this in Abhay Gir, we talk about it as a term about putting yourself in the box of the monastic form. And for lay people, this works, this is just as well as like five precepts. So you have like, this is the things that I've determined I'm going to do, and that's the line I'm drawing, and I'm not going to go over that line. And by doing that, one is setting up a sense of blamelessness where that allows the mind to not have to worry about its actions. Like, I can't be blamed because what I'm doing and what I'm according with is not transgressing the world. I'm not killing things, I'm not lying, I'm not taking intoxicants, certain restraints around food. And, you know, then what's there to be said? I mean, there are people in the world who can come up with ways of still blaming that, but in terms of the Dhamma, I would say that it is a blameless state. But this really leads to the three core principles of the Dhamma is sila, morality, samadhi, and panya. So we take on these various restraints so that by not engaging in them, the mind has a settledness. Had that settledness proves is the concentration and develops the concentration. And then with that state of mind, we penetrate into the nature of how we fabricate these problems to begin with. And it's a reciprocal process. It keeps going and going. It keeps getting deeper and deeper. And whatever you put into it, whatever determinations you make, whatever challenges you put for yourself, that's what you'll get out of it. And so really the Dhamma is something that appreciate and put some effort into it, and it'll reward you with some benefit. And then if you go, as the Buddha did, completely give yourself over to it, it's possible to completely liberate yourself from the world and all the problems we create. So part of that really just gets down to the mental proliferation we have around any kind of result and or what it will be when we take on a determination. So once you put yourself like, okay, I'm going to do this, then you have to live with the consequences. But those consequences are quite often you're fabricating the worst possible outcome and not seeing the potential like of what it feels like when you've been able to hold that determination and then that idea that you had, you're not possessed by it any longer. You're no longer dominated by fears of those results. And you also see the benefits that we never really tend to go to the, like, if I do this very difficult thing, I'm going to see these, you know, pleasant benefits from it. We only tend to look at the negative potential future. So there was one thing I had a problem when I first, and this is very typical when you really get, you know, you're in a monastic environment, lots of people, you know, get a little bit of a gung-ho-ness. I think Ajahn Chah, there's a famous Ajahn Chah story of, they do these aditas, strong determinations for the pansa, the vasa. And this one monk's like, oh, I'm going to do all 10. You know, and it's just, it's more than the mind can take. You need to set up your determinations in a way that allows you to see success, but it pushes you. It's something a little more than you're comfortable with doing. And then once you've done something and you realize, oh, well, all those ideas and all those delusions, what I thought would happen when I did this, they just didn't occur. And or if they did occur, really, you know, it wasn't the suffering I made it out to be. So I had this one that was, I had multiple ones, but when I was I weighed 220 pounds when I first became an Anacharaka. And at a Bayagiri, we have like, it's like 700 feet of elevation, and like, you know, it takes you about, when I first started, it took me about 30 minutes to get to my kuti, and a lot of pauses and huffing and puffing. But, because it's quite an arduous terrain. It's very, very difficult. It's rock, scree, poison oak, and the community and lay supporters have carved these trails and these, you know, switchbacks to get you up the hill. And I was like, man, I'm not going to make it here if I don't shed some of this weight. And so I took on this determination, well, a lot of determinations on eating less food, but I also took on this determination of walking what we call this loop trail every day for a year. And that's about, I think it's about 2.2 miles, and maybe about 1,500 feet up and down or something, I can't remember. It's a nice little hike, it's no real big deal. But, you know, I didn't really think about, you know, you can't go through all the possible scenarios of what this might be. It's sometimes a little bit of a whim. Seemed like a good idea at the time. But then, you know, and I thought I could do it on my own, like my, you know, I can do it during the middle of the day, and you don't really know, you know, aren't used to the climate. But it got to be in the winter time where there was a period of time where we had, during the rains, or our winter retreat, where, you know, our day, like Ajahn Pasa would say, okay, we start puja at 5 a.m. and we practice in the sala, sitting and walking every 45 minutes all the way to the meal, and then we eat the meal and sitting and walking all the way through the evening. And then I'm like, huh, when am I going to get my walk in? And it would turn out to be that, like especially on a Saturday night, we would go to like 9 or 10 o'clock, that walk would go, you know, it'd be pouring rain, 40 degrees, and all the stuff in your mind's like, oh, man, I can't do this. Do I really need to make this determination? What kind of excuses can I make? All these kind of things. And then the thing was, is it was like some of the most amazing experiences I had. Like, you're out in the middle of the forest and just pouring rain, and it's just like turning off the headlamp and just taking in the experience. Just wouldn't trade it for anything. It was like, there's nobody out here. I'm all, you know. And that's the way, you know, in many ways, that's the way life is that we create it entirely in our own little world, in our own little head, and there's nobody out there with us. You know, we're really, in many ways, fighting that battle ourselves. But all those stories, all those miserableness kind of things that can go along with some kind of determination, they just weren't true. You know, just doing it, you know, just builds upon the ability that, like, well, what else isn't true? We need to, you know, constantly kind of step back and look at the stories we're telling ourselves about how it is or how it's going to be or how this person is or how what they're going to do or how they're going to be or how the world's going to be. In many ways, it's like the only way to really properly relate to it is to like try to respond in the best way at the moment and not worry so much about the future and the past. There's obviously planning involved, but when, like the Buddha has the two arrow simile. We have the arrow of pain, we have the arrow of a situation, and then we put all the suffering on top of it, all the stories on top of it, all the worries on top of it, and that's the part that's optional. And by challenging those stories, then they start to lose their efficacy. And then they come, it's like those armies of Mara, they come at you and like, well, you know, I've seen you before, I've seen this story before. You know what? I bet you if I wait long enough, I'll forget the story even happened. Like, how do you ever do that? Go back and like, gosh, I remember when this situation in my career was like, oh my gosh, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do with this relationship. Oh, I don't even remember it anymore. I don't even think about it. At the time, it seemed like it was the end of the world. And then, you know, you do that enough, and then you realize, well, I created a lot of problems where I didn't need to. So in particular, when it comes to the Dhamma Vinaya, though, these are tried and true lines that they bring forth and show to you where intention is. So that's like, here's something I'm taking on as a precept, and I'm not going to cross that. So like a simple one that you get, like not killing, you know, when you first take something like that on, usually one of the ones that get you first are like ants and mosquitoes. Like, you know, we got, I hear there are real buggers here. I hear that I'm in for a new challenge near a river in the spring. We have them decently at, Abhayagiri, and we'll sit outside. We used to, I don't know, I've been there a couple of years. I hear they're not doing it as much, but meditate outside, and you know they really come good in the dawn and the evening. So you're sitting there meditating, and then like you know, you're becoming a meal, and that's one of the reflections I actually like to use is like, I bet you I'm like pizza for a mosquito. I'm like, well, now how would I feel if I were like to go into the alms room, the alms line? And there were like these three or four pizzas there. And as soon as I started to grab for that slice of pizza, some big hand came and squashed me. How would I feel about that? I mean, I'm just trying to get a little bite to eat. So, I mean, that's what mosquitoes are doing. They're just trying to get by. They got a wife and kids at home. Husband and kids at home. I don't know about mosquito biology. I think the females that do the major. They're producing eggs or something. So they got a husband and a brood to make, and they're just trying to get by. And it really isn't that big of a deal to give a little donation to their cause, you know. And once you don't do that for a while, you realize, gosh, I created all this, like, this is such an insignificant physical phenomenon. The little proboscis or whatever they got going in is nothing. It's them pulling it out. That's a little bit of a boink, and they fly away. But it's still insignificant. But you know, that's just a very small little line, but you realize that, yeah, you shouldn't cross it. And then you see other places where, you know, and we have that, that's what Abhayagiri is actually named after. I don't know if you know the derivation of the Pali that is. Fearless mountain. And by living in accordance with precept and living in accordance with a standard by which one is blameless, that really comes from the state of volition. So I live in this way for the benefit of myself and others, and that's, I'm saying that as the collective we, our collective I, that's what we do. People can come there without any kind of sense that we're doing it for any reason. Like, we're doing it really for the benefit of the Dhamma. And you know, I don't know if I heard this saying here. I thought it was quite brilliant. I'm trying to bring it up to comes to become more permanent in my mind. But they have the adage of the difference between the Theravadins and the Mahayanins is that, you know, they have the lesser vehicle and the greater vehicle, and the lesser vehicle being the Hinayana is us. We only care about ourselves. You know, we're just going to enlighten ourselves. Whereas the Mahayanins, they're out to save all beings. I don't know who said this, but it's like Theravadins. Yeah, they're saving all the beings from themselves. You know, we're trying not to cause suffering to everybody else in the world by just taking care of ourselves. And to me, that's all I can really do is I'm just not trying to hurt anybody else. So I really want to come back around to this idea of intention, because it is quite critical that these kind of determinations, we're doing them for the right reason as well. Like, we're not doing them just to inflate ourselves or inflate others, but like to see at what, if I have the desire to cross over this, let's say, rule and or what we call core lot, why am I doing that? Why am I willing to give up this determination? Would it be for just say comfort and ease, a warm belly? At what point do I give up? Well, I find it very difficult. It's like a slippery slope. Once you start giving them up, then you lose the ability to hold them. Quite central to being successful with them is actually, though, is making them into a habit, and making them embodying them as just the way things are. It's just to make it the pattern of the mind, because really the source of the suffering is attending to wrong patterns. It's attending to the patterns of indulging in fleeting sensual desires and fleeting sense of identity, and instead turning the mind towards the patterns of constant change, constant uncertainty, and developing ease and comfort with that. And if you're willing to let go of a determination for a temporal one little fleeting moment of difficulty, you won't get the chance to see that on the other side, that difficulty is just going to go away. One of my favorite things that Lompal Pasano told me, I had long known that the idea of sensual objects really were absolutely totally irrelevant to the actual problem. I was creating, if I gave up one sensual thing, I would just find another one. That's why, in the Sabbasava Sutta, the manifestation of the effluence or the craving nature of the mind all boils down to sensual desire or the desire for becoming or ignorance. And it doesn't, you see this in the monastic form, it just becomes so apparent. If one aspect of your indulgence is taken away, or you've made a determination not to do it, it'll manifest somewhere else. It'll manifest in some kind of aversion. And then you get that aversion down, and then it'll manifest in some kind of storytelling. And you get that storytelling, it'll manifest here, it'll manifest there. And then you realize that the external manifestations are irrelevant. But along positive, one thing that I just did not understand around this was any kind of doubt. Where I have doubt over a certain thing, and he said, it's ending of doubt is not getting the answer to the question of doubt. It's being comfortable with having doubt. It's the fact that there's always doubt until the end. There's always uncertainty as to the course of action to be taken. But you'd have to just develop comfort with that and just make your best choice and keep moving forward. See the results and learn from it and just keep moving forward. So I'll offer that for reflection.
And Mayam Dhamma Kataya Sadhu Kalam. Namaste, sadhu, 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 sadh